On the last day of September, the Anchorage Assembly passed an ordinance to the city's anti-discrimination law that extends protections to gay, lesbian, and transgender people in areas of employment and housing, making Anchorage the first city in the state to do so. It was a hard-fought battle with a long history. Opponents have said they won't give up and will work to bring the issue to a ballot vote. What does and doesn't the new ordinance require? What are the exemptions and how will they apply? Equal rights protection is the topic today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
These days, being into STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, doesn't make a girl a geek, it makes the world a better place. If you like numbers, nature, computers, and figuring out how the world really works, go to beanengineeralaska.com. You just might like what you learn. And it's not just for girls. This message on Alaska Public Media brought to you by ExxonMobil in Alaska.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. Thanks for joining us today. Alaska was the first state in the nation to pass a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage in 1998, defining it as one man, one woman. Federal Judge Timothy Burgess struck that down last year, saying it violated the civil rights of plaintiffs. The fight for equal treatment and legal recognition for LGBT people has a fairly long history in Alaska and Anchorage. The fight is now over, or is it? Here to discuss what Ordinance 96 means and how it will legally apply in Alaska's largest city is Anchorage Assembly member Bill Evans, who sponsored the ordinance. Bill is also an attorney. Welcome.
Welcome.
Thanks for being here. Also joining us is John Arono. John is the founder and managing editor of Alaska Commons, sort of a Huffington Post for Alaska, where news, public affairs, commentary, and entertainment is written and aggregated. John, welcome.
Thank you. Good
morning. I
hope
that's not insulting.
No, I'll take it. I'll wear that.
Okay,
let's
good.
Do it.
You can also join our conversation if you have questions about how the ordinance applies to landlords, to employers, what this will mean in action. Our number locally in Anchorage is 550-8422, 550-8422. And statewide, the number is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Bill, give us the basics. Why did you decide you needed to take this up, especially so early in your tenure on the assembly?
I think it was an issue that obviously has a long history, like you mentioned. It's been passed by the assembly before, vetoed by the mayors. And with the election of Mayor Berkowitz, it was, again, put front and center in that campaign and was one of the goals that was clearly put forward by the mayor for what he wanted to get accomplished. And I think the makeup of the assembly was certainly supportive of it. And I thought with my background as an employment lawyer and coming at it from a different perspective as sort of a conservative as opposed to who you'd normally suspect would bring forward this ordinance, I had at least a chance of making the debate and the dialogue a little different. And I thought that'd be a worthwhile attempt. And that's what I did.
And how would it be different? As a conservative person, how did you sort of frame the discussion so that maybe it had an appeal to a sector of the population that it might not have before?
Well, initially my goal was to try to put forth an ordinance that was, in my mind, balanced. I mean, I understood what the objections were from the various groups that were opposed to this in the past. Religious groups and employers and others that would be affected by it. So my initial attempt was to put an ordinance together that would expand the rights to based on sexual orientation and gender identity, but at the same time try to weave in certain protections to make those who are opposed feel a little more comfortable about the ordinance. The grand scheme in my mind was that people would look at it, nobody would be particularly happy with it, but that we could, kind of reach agreement that we all equally disliked it, but it was probably an advancement and could get along with it without all the turmoil that occurred last time with the whole months of testimony and all that and all the ugliness that ensued. I'm not sure it quite worked out that way, but at least that's how things started.
You represent South Anchorage?
Correct.
How did your constituents in South Anchorage see this work?
Well, you know, it's South Anchorage is a big place, and my constituents are pretty varied. There were certainly some that were supporters of mine that were taken off guard by this and quite upset by my putting it forward. There were others I heard from who, you know, liked the approach and you know, gave me credit for at least trying to move this forward in a different way and kind of appreciated the perspective. So it was kind of a mixed bag.
Mm-hmm. Tell us just a little bit, and John, I'll get you in here in just a minute.
Sure.
I'm sorry, I don't want you
no
to feel
worries.
Left out. If you're just joining us, by the way, this is Talk of Alaska, and we are talking today about Anchorage Ordinance 96, equal protection for LGBT people, for employment, for housing. We're going to discuss what exactly that means and what it does not mean. You can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255 or locally in Anchorage, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Tell us about the process. When you're working on an ordinance that is sure to draw heat, How does that work go with your assembly members? Is everything in public, or do you have some sessions where you're kind of behind closed doors hashing out the language? Tell us about the process.
Well, because of how the laws are with the Open Meetings Act, we can't meet together more than two other of us. So three of us at the most can get together outside of public view. With this ordinance, I basically drafted it myself. I talked to a couple different assembly members over the summer about just where their positions were on the issue. And then I worked with the new municipal attorney, Bill Falsey, who was my former law partner before the summer when he got the job at the municipal attorney's office. And we worked together on the language and put it forward. After that, I've had a few conversations with other assembly members, but there were quite a few of them whose ideas I really had no idea where they were on the spectrum. I could guess, but that's all it was at that point.
Mm-hmm. Let's discuss AO 96 in practical terms. Say I'm an Anchorage employer. Can I decide I don't want to give a job to an LGBT person?
No, not on that basis. You can certainly decide you don't want to give a job to an LGBT person if that person is not as qualified as somebody else. What the law does is says you cannot use a person's sexual orientation, whether it's straight or homosexual, bisexual, or whatever, as a reason for taking an employment action. The same goes for, you know, rentals of properties and other forms of discrimination. You can decide between people, but it can't be on those particular bases.
So it's the same type of protections based on gender or race. It's just sort of the idea is to equal the playing field for everyone in these areas.
Yeah, it's exactly the same. And in fact, all we're doing is adding these categories of protection to the existing law. It should be administered in the same way. It should be treated in the same way. We're not adding new people, and I think that's important to understand. People keep talking about special rights for certain people. First of all, the ordinance applies to everyone because everyone has a sexual orientation, no matter what it is. And the second is that, you know, what we're adding is not people to protection. We're adding an idea. And the idea are things that we in Anchorage believe should not be the basis of decisions either in the workplace or in the marketplace. And it's more of a concept, I think, than it is of special rights, which it often gets mischaracterized as.
Mm-hmm. John Arono, you have been observing this for a number of years now. What's the trajectory, Ben, that you've been watching? This did not go so well in 2009 or 2012, and actually it stretches back even farther than that.
Back to 1976, yeah. In 1976 was the first time the Assembly actually did pass an Equal Protections Ordinance, which is amazing to think about, all the way back in 1976, when you look at polling and where people were. Mayor George Sullivan, who was mayor at that time, vetoed it. Then it came back before the body in 1993. It was a much more watered-down version that only pertained to public employees. And the really interesting part about that is the same thing happened. The Assembly passed it. the Reverend Jerry Prevost of Anchorage Baptist Temple and other religious community leaders tried to get a referendum on the ballot, but the Alaska Supreme Court actually denied it from being certified. So he instead took the tack of replacing assembly members, and those assembly members, after that next April election, repealed the Equal Protection Ordinance. So then we flash forward to 2009, which was my first rodeo, and that was also passed by the assembly. Mayor George Sullivan's son, Mayor Dan Sullivan, vetoed that one. They were one vote shy of overriding the veto. And we came to 2012, which is a really complicated issue, but that's when backers of an equal protection ordinance decided, well, we have tried this time and time again through the assembly, through, you know, democratic means, and they opted for direct democracy and tried to pass equal protection laws via ballot initiative. The election was very troubled. The municipal clerk was fired over it. The Alaska Family Council President Jim Minery actually sent an email out on the day of the election saying that you could, basically saying that Anchorage had same day registration, which he had previously been told by the municipal clerk that is not actually accurate. There were ballot shortages. It was a very, very troubled election, but it was solidly defeated beyond any of the aberrations that were possible. So this was, you know, a product of the mayoral campaign. Even before the runoff, you had Andrew Halcrow, a Republican who was very strongly in support of this. Same with, now Mayor Ethan Berkowitz. And you had Assemblywoman Amy Dembosky and former Assemblyman Dan Coffey, who were very much against it. And the argument has always been that they saw no evidence of discrimination in the debate that went on in 2009. And 2009 was amazing. This was, I would say, a heated discussion, a lot of really passionate public testimony, but it was a couple nights. When Anchorage Ordinance 64...
You're talking about this as in currently.
Yes. Ordinance 96. In 2009 with Ordinance 64, there was over 40 hours of public testimony. It spanned the entire summer. There were protests on the lawn. There were all sorts of interesting things. There was not a lot of requirements. You know, this time you had to say what your name was, what part of town you lived in. That was not the case in 2009. And we had people from all over the place coming in to testify. And it was a really brutal discussion. And I got to say that this time was handled masterfully by the assembly. And it got us this equal protection law, which I think is going to be a huge step forward for Anchorage.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we're discussing Anchorage Ordinance 96 that extends protections to LGBT people for issues of employment and housing. You can join our conversation if you have questions. Other communities in Alaska are considering ordinances as well. If you have a question about your community or what this could mean on the in practical application in your community, give us a call. 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255 statewide or in Anchorage, 550-8422. 550-8422. You can email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Why do you think it was so different, this current debate, and this is a question for both of you, Bill and John, than it was in 2009? Why was it much more kind of a more civilized, less heated round of discussions?
I might not go as far as civilized at all times, but yeah, it definitely was a lot better. You know, it's the product of marriage equality is now the law of the land. I think a lot more people know LGBT folks in their life, their coworker. You know, it's not as much of these folks are in the closet, they're hiding who they are. You know, we've had Don't Ask, Don't Tell repealed. So a lot of the military community has come out. There's a giant normalization that's going on where it's not the weird thing where the opposition can solely rely on transvestites being sexual predators in the bathrooms, even though that's still their main argument. But a lot more people now know trans people. A lot more people know gay and lesbian Alaskan residents. So it's a lot harder to object to them being treated the same as everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Bill, did you want to add something there?
No, I think John's right on that. I mean, this is an issue that obviously, you know, we've seen change dramatically just over the last 10 years nationwide and here as well. You know, I could pat myself on the back and say that, you know, my idea about, you know, taking this from my perspective as a conservative and having that initial ordinance kind of have both religious protections and added protections for the LGBT community was part of it. I think at least initially the debate was a little different because if nothing else, it kind of confused people. You know, I got comments from both sides being concerned about what I was doing. And maybe to that extent, it made people think about the issues a little bit more than just have their normal kind of knee-jerk reaction to it. I don't know if that's the case, but certainly whatever it was, I do believe that it was a more civil process this time and more beneficial, I think, in the long run.
Well, John, you mentioned people in bathrooms, and that seems to be kind of a hang-up for people who are opposed.
That's a good word for it, yeah.
The bathroom issue. In fact, we had a question from someone who didn't want to come on the air but said, what does the city ordinance mean for transgender individuals and which public restrooms they can use?
What the ordinance says is that employers or anybody who has a public restroom can continue to have restrooms that are segregated by sex, have both men's rooms, women's rooms. But the law specifically says that people who are transgendered may use the restroom with of the sex with which they identify, the life that they are living. And that is the only protection in there for them in that regard. But it prevents if somebody is actually transgendered, is a transgendered woman, you know, she is allowed to use the woman's room regardless of what their actual sex at birth was or anything like that.
Certainly. John?
And this has been a really, this is kind of where the dynamic of this giant momentum change fails. Because whereas, you know, gays and lesbians are, they are among us. They're, you know, a minority, but a large minority and people that we know every day and talk to and associate with. The trans community is a lot smaller and a lot more discriminated against and a lot more unknown. Unfortunately, I think that it's going to take the same thing which normalized the L, G, and B part of the community. It's going to take that same thing over time for people to understand the transgender community. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to get to know one. unfortunately, that manifested itself in 2009 and 2012 and this year, and I'm sure in 1976 and 1993, as this weird assumption of what it means to be trans. We heard a lot of, you know, the cross-dressers in the bathrooms that were after our children. That's pedophilia. That is a crime. That is not a gender identity. We heard concerns that children's sports teams would be affected because a guy will want to play on a girl's team because, you know, some men can be more athletic. The idea that you would uproot every fiber of your being to get an edge in softball for a season, number one, just is extremely telling in how much lack of understanding there is about the trans community. And number two, if you do know members of that community, it's offensive. Imagine you woke up one day and you did not feel right in your own skin. You know, I cannot over explain how drastic a thing that is in life to realize that your parts, you know, how you were put together don't match how you feel. And there was a lot of concern over the bathroom issue, and there were a lot of, you know, a few amendments, you know, that would have required a permission slip essentially to ask your employer if you could use the restroom that you identified with. There was one trans woman who gave public testimony, and she, I think, said what is obvious to anyone who is trans, or obvious to anyone who's straight and willing to listen, or gay or lesbian or bi. We use the bathroom to do that thing and get it done and go on with the rest of our day. We should afford people the dignity of using the one that they look in the mirror and feel is appropriate.
Well, and let's be clear, there is certainly no evidence to suggest that gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual people have any higher percentage of rates of pedophilia than any other person that's out there.
Plenty of people will cite evidence, but it is not scientific. It is completely debunked by actual statistics. I mean, some people are bad people. Some people have mental illnesses. Being trans is not a mental illness. That is a gender identity.
1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255 if you'd like to join our conversation statewide. You can also call us at 550-8422, 550-8422 in the Anchorage area. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Let's talk a little bit about landlords. Now, Bill, what is the test if you're a landlord someone approaches you and wants to rent an apartment? They're a transgender person.
It's going to depend on the type of apartment, first of all, that you're renting. Generally, across the board, the law applies to landlords or people selling property that you can't discriminate on the basis of sexual identity or sexual orientation or gender identity. But there are exceptions that already existed in the law that we haven't changed that still apply. And those are for the situations in which the landlord has a smaller unit of four families or less, in which the landlord or a manager or an agent actually lives in the building. In those cases, because of the close proximity, the law has always given landlords sort of an exemption or a pass that since they are living there with them, they have a greater right to control who they're going to live with. And the law doesn't impose any of the civil rights or equal protection laws on them.
Really?
Yes. Huh. And it makes sense when you think about landlords who are renting out like a room in their house, which
right,
does
but
occur.
Right, a fourplex.
Yeah, a fourplex. I don't know where the size came from, but a fourplex, and it has to be somebody, and you have to actually live there as well. You have to be like, the landlord has to own one of the units and live there. And in those cases, the law exempts you from having to comply with the equal protection.
For anyone?
For anyone.
So you could say, I only want white people living in this fourplex.
Yeah, it's just you're exempted from the whole law.
Though there are federal laws that could technically, protect someone from racial discrimination or.
Okay. Yeah. I was thinking back to, I live in Airport Heights, where I actually live in Grandview Gardens, but that area of town. And the Airport Heights Elementary School is undertaking a project right now as part of, looking back to the beginning of the school, and found a document about the Airport Heights neighborhood that at one point in time there was covenants that said you could not sell or transfer the land to anyone who was not white. Mm-hmm. It was stunning to read that and to think how far Anchorage has come. I live right next door to what was, one of the most diverse zip codes in the nation in Mountain View. So it's amazing how far we've come. How do you think people will see this struggle in another decade? What do you think the conversation will be like then?
Well, I certainly hope it's like all these other milestones we've passed in civil rights, is that in retrospect, we'll look back and, hopefully it's not even 10 years from now and think, but wow, that wasn't really a big deal after all. What took us so long to get there? And I think it's going to be the same with this community as it has been with the others. And I have no reason to believe it won't be.
I hope you're right. I do agree that it will take a lot less time for people to come around on this. But I would add the caveat that there is probably for a time we can't put a estimate on, there's going to be, factions in the community that don't catch up. And that's why these laws are necessary. That's why quite honestly, we'll probably need to do more in the future. You know, when we talk about the fourplex, when we talk about the ministerial exemption, where certain, you know, religious organizations can still say, we don't like the gay, so you can't work here.
Mm-hmm. And I do want to talk about those exemptions and what they mean. We are talking about equality in Anchorage today and Anchorage Ordinance 96 that extends equal protection to lesbian people, to gay people, to transgender, to bisexual. It incorporates protections for all those folks. And Anchorage is leading the way in the state of Alaska, the first city to pass such an ordinance. You can join our conversation, please do, as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com. Learn more about Alaska Pacific University during a three-day weekend experience October 30th to November 1st. Experience the campus and Anchorage while discovering how APU can map out your educational adventure by attending courses, participating in activities, and interacting with faculty and other students. Register at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are discussing Anchorage Ordinance 96 today that extends protections to LGBT people in Alaska's largest city. Here is a comment from an email comment from a listener that wants to know, can transgender athletes enter events like the Gold Nugget Ski for Women? Is the ordinance in effect with community-run events like the Ski for Women, Gold Nugget, etc.?
The ordinance is in effect once it was signed a few days ago. And the answer is maybe. I mean, I think with respect to events like that and athletic events, while it would be impermissible to discriminate solely based on the fact that somebody is their sexual orientation or their gender identity, you can discriminate on other bases as if they're being trans somehow would give them an undue advantage in the competition, so that you're basically evaluating not their identity, but keeping the field fair, which is going to be a difficult task for these organizations. But I think that's really the issue at hand. Is everybody's concerned that, well, if we allow, you know, trans women who are biologically maybe male or at least at birth to enter female competitions, it's going to give them an unfair advantage. And I think it's going to depend on a case-by-case basis of the type of event and what the organizers want to do. It's certainly something they can allow. And a lot of times, you know, for all we know, it could be happening already. I mean, a lot of trans people aren't noticeably not, you know, they don't have to identify themselves necessarily as trans when they enter these events. And, you know, to outward appearances, you wouldn't necessarily know. So the fact may be that they already are doing that, and the law would protect the right to do that unless the organizers had some basis based in the competition or something based other than solely their identity that would prevent it.
But it sounds kind of messy.
I would, again, emphasize the fact, though, that if there is a trans person wishing to compete in sports, that's because they're a person who wants to play sports. I think it's a real showing of, you know, a lack of understanding when people try to apply someone's gender identity as a strategy to get ahead. You know, if I wanted to, I could wake up one morning and say, you know what, I identify as a woman, and I could join a softball league. It wouldn't change the fact that I can't hit. you know, If they're playing sports, it's because they want to play sports as the person that they are. So I just really caution people who are trying to fit this square peg in a round hole and say, no, they're going to try to use this as a cheat.
For both of you, the ballot initiative Prop 5 in 2012 that sought similar protections, it was crushed by about 60% of the voters. Just a few years later, if opponents brought a repeal ballot to voters, as some have said that they want to do, what do you think would happen now?
Well, I think it's a different story now for a lot of reasons. One, as John pointed out before, I think people's ideas about this issue have evolved pretty dramatically even over the last 3 years. So I think just everything else being equal, I think it would certainly be a lot closer vote if not going the other way. Also, the way things are sort of teed up this time is now that we've extended the rights to this group, you're talking about actually taking away rights that they already have. And I think that's a lot harder to do. And as John pointed out, the Supreme Court has already weighed in at one point saying that's a whole different ballgame and you can't do that in the same manner. And the third thing, which I find the most important and the reason I did not want to put this to an advisory vote in April and suspend the imposition of the ordinance until then, is because I think it's very important, because we talk about this issue in such apocalyptic terms about what's going to happen if we extend these protections, that, you know, churches are going to be sued and go bankrupt and we'll have all kind of assaults in restrooms and all that type of stuff, that now that the law is in effect, we'll have 6 months before it can be put on the ballot. We'll have 6 months of actual living under the law. People will see what the real effects are, and we'll have a better sense. If it's going to be on the ballot, they'll at least be able to vote on what has transpired, not about people's fears about what might happen in the future.
The speculation, yes. I mean,
we heard when the U.S. Supreme Court found that marriage equality was going to be the law of the land. We heard the same, you know, the sky is falling, it's going to be chaos, it's moral decay. And I remember I attended the first same-sex wedding in Anchorage. Two of the plaintiffs in the case that struck down the ban, Stephanie Pearson and Courtney. The sky didn't fall. It snowed, but that was nice. It was pleasant. So I do think that much in the same way, people are going to realize that we're not going to wake up tomorrow and there's going to be giant cataclysmic events. My one caveat to that, though, is, you know, Prop 5 failed by 15 points, I think, or something around there. That's a lot to make up in 3 years. Nor is it something that we should be voting on. As Bill said, these are rights. They shouldn't be up for a vote. They shouldn't have been in 2012, but nobody had a better idea. So if you're clawing for equal protection, you're not going to care very much about the means. And that's why it ended up as a ballot initiative. The Assembly dumped it 3 times in a row. Mm-hmm. So
1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. That's the number to call statewide if you'd like to join our conversation on Talk of Alaska today about equal protection under Ordinance 96 for LGBT people. You can also call 550-8422 in the Anchorage area or email us, talk@alaskapublic.org, such as Christopher Constant did. This is a little bit of an aside, but still interesting about how things advance in society. Restrictive covenants still on the books, he says. Although unenforceable, the current plat in the Fairview neighborhood in Anchorage, just above the Sullivan Arena, still reads, "The premises herein concerned shall not be sold or alienated in any manner whatsoever except to Americans of the white race." So, and he sent a copy of that ordinance. So, you know, we do see that change may scare people. It may be difficult at times. It's often messy, and sorting it all out takes time, and maybe there has to be tweaks here and there. But it's still moving forward, and that's good. Let's go to the phones now. Charles is in Anchorage. Hi, Charles.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Do you have a comment?
Yeah, I was just calling a few minutes back. One of the guests, I'm sorry, I don't remember which one, made a comment about, you know, that there would be essentially pockets of resistance changing moving forward, and that, you know, and I felt that his comment about religious folks who were saying, "Oh, we hate the gays, so we're not gonna hire them," was kind of flippant and disrespectful towards the issue of religious liberty. I mean, you know, I'm not saying that I want anyone to be discriminated against, but certainly if someone's gender identity is worth protecting, someone's religious liberty is equally worth protecting them. I would think. To me, that's just as core of an issue. And to say that, well, our next goal is just to overturn the religious liberty exemption, and just the way he put it, I thought showed a massive disregard for people who have legitimate objections to this.
Okay. Well, thanks for raising that, Charles. And let's give, I think that was John Arono who
yes.
may have said that. So let's give him a chance to clarify what he meant.
Absolutely. And Charles, I apologize if I came off as flippant, and I in no way mean to be disrespectful. I would basically challenge the definition of two words you used there. One is a legitimate beef with this. And why I challenge that definition is another definition of liberty. We all have religious liberties. There's the First Amendment. It's pretty plain and clear. We all have the right to observe our own religious beliefs. The problem that I see is when liberty is extended and when liberty is used against someone else's beliefs, that's no longer liberty, as far as I'm concerned. That is a weapon. Liberty means your own ability to live the life you want to live according to your beliefs. But that shouldn't mean that you're able to take liberties away from someone else. And that's the heart of this matter. There is no abridging the free exercise of religion here. It's just saying you can't treat someone else lesser
because of your beliefs.
Yeah.
Let's talk about those religious exemptions. There were some things put into place. What exactly are they? Bill, give us the rundown of what those exemptions would allow a religious organization to do.
Sure. There always has been in our Equal Rights Ordinance a religious preference exemption. It's existed for, I don't know how far back, but I think from the time they created the ordinance in the first place. And it allows bona fide religious organizations, which include societies, schools, anything associated like that, to basically give a preference in hiring and other factors to members of their own religion or denomination. And it kind of qualifies that as long as the hiring is reasonably calculated to promote the principles for which the religion is there or founded or maintained. So basically a church that has a certain belief, it can use that belief in its hiring practices. But it has to show that, it's a defense, and it has to be able to show that by not hiring a certain group of people, it has a religious need to do that. And that's always been the law. And it basically derives from the First Amendment, which, says the government won't infringe on free exercise of religion. And this is our attempt to do that, to prevent government from infringing on the free exercise of religion. The new ordinance, 96, added one more exemption. It was called the ministerial exemption. And it's really, in a sense, a subset of that first protection. And it applies just to persons who are hired for religious purposes, basically. Most of your ministers, teachers, things like that. And it allows religions to disregard the equal rights law when hiring. And, that explains why, all Catholic priests are males. We don't, even though it would otherwise be sex discrimination, but we've carved out that kind of free space for religions. And again, these are all derivative of the First Amendment, which is really the root of our religious protections. And it's very important, I think, that people understand that nothing we did in this ordinance or nothing we are capable of doing can in any way limit the First Amendment protections that they already have.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Ryan is on the line. Hi, Ryan.
Hello, how you doing?
Good. Did you have a question?
Yes, ma'am. Well, I do believe everyone wants to get treated equally and everybody should get treated fairly. But then my question also is, but what about the rights of the people that might not be transsexual and things like that as such, far as bathrooms used and things like that? I overheard that just a little bit, but my concerns are, I mean, what's stopping people that don't feel comfortable with somebody like that in the restroom? I mean, and not being called a racist or a bigot or a hate monger if just because they don't feel comfortable with another, you know, someone of like that in the restroom. I don't know what's the answers of maybe, you know, fixing that problem. But I mean, I had a situation with me and my daughter, and a gentleman was going that was trans, you know, was going to walk in the restroom right behind her. And I told her to wait, you know, wait back until he got finished. And then I got looked at like I was, you know, I did something wrong. But what about us? What about our, you know, our rights and and our concerns and our feelings about certain things?
All right. Well, let's let our guests give an answer here. Thanks, Ryan.
Sure. That, you know, Ryan, you hit on it's a very, probably the most difficult issue that we kind of faced with this. Is how to handle this space where everybody has sort of a privacy interest in restrooms, locker rooms, and such. And I think, and I'm not sure we came up with, you know, the ultimate answer to this, but the thing that is important to keep in mind is that right now, whatever trans people are out there, and they're living their lives based on, you know, whatever gender they identify with. So trans women are, you know, they're dressing as women, they're living as women, they have feminine names, they're, you know, to all extents and purposes are living the life of females in society. Generally, when they use the restroom, currently, they're using the restroom that is consistent with that. And, most of the time, you won't even notice. And that's been going on for years. It's rare, the situation you talk about where, you know, you had with somebody who obviously looked like a male to you using the restroom, you know, before your daughter went in. I'm not sure, you know, what the situation, whether that person was a trans person or what.
Maybe they got confused about what bathroom they were going in.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's important to understand that the law only protects the legitimate transgender person from using the restroom that they identify with. It doesn't allow people to willy-nilly choose one bathroom one day, one the next. It has to be a consistent pattern. They have to be able to be, you know, legitimately identified as trans. And in those cases, they are protected to use the bathroom that they need to use. And for the most part, those people are not predators. They are not out there to do anything. As a matter of fact, they are more often in these cases the victims of attacks and other incidences when they are discovered as using, you know, certain restrooms or certain facilities. They just want to do, you know, their business and move along and certainly don't want to even draw attention to themselves. Well, I think what Ryan is talking about are the people that are perhaps have mental problems or are predators, and they exist, you know, in all communities, and there's nothing in this law that makes it any easier for them to, you know, a man who wants to go into a woman's restroom, you know, last month could dress as a woman and try to do that. It would be illegal then, it'd be illegal now.
Right.
They would have to be legitimately trans to have any sort of actual protection.
All right. Thank you for that answer. And we're going to stick with the phones for a minute here because we've got some calls stacking up. This is Rose in Kenai. Hi, Rose.
Hi. How are you today?
Good. Do you have a question?
Yeah, no, I actually have a comment. And it really has to do with the semantics when we're discussing all this. You know, all through the show, it's been, a transgender person, a gay person. And we're kind of putting the label before actually the personhood. You know, she may be a woman who is lesbian or a woman who is transgender. And I find a big difference in saying, that's a woman who is transgender than a transgender woman. I feel like it is putting the importance and the label on gay, lesbian, transgender, black, white, whatever, before we're saying, hey, this is a woman, this is a person. And I think that in society, that's something we need to start looking at and start thinking about as we're talking about different issues.
Okay.
A guy who's gay.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Rose. Comment about labels and how...
Yeah, thank you very much for the comment, Rose. And yeah, what I like to remind people is lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, those are adjectives. There is a noun behind them, and that's the person. Mm-hmm. We heard a lot of testimony from folks who said that they were against rights for the LGBT. And that's not recognizing the person behind their gender identity or sexual orientation.
Yeah.
It's a really important point.
It is an important point to watch the labels. We had an email question. Can the Alaska Club legally keep its all-women facility without transgender people? There's that label again. As a business, can they choose to exclude transgender clientele from their women-only branch?
The short answer is no. You couldn't, under the existing law, you can't exclude transgender people from anything based on their being transgender. You know, currently, you know, the way a lot of the fitness clubs operate, there are transgender. I know Alaska Club has transgender persons using their facilities, have for a long time, and it hasn't caused much problem. But I also know the Alaska Club is very concerned about that, mostly because of the reaction of the rest of the community, who are concerned about what's going to happen now, not realizing it's basically going to be the same as happened before. But the short answer is no, they cannot do it based on gender identity.
Mm-hmm. John?
Yeah, can I will. We're mainly in agreement. I'll respectfully push back and give the short answer of yes, because a trans woman is a woman.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Eric is in Homer. Hi, Eric.
Hi, good morning. You know, I was kind of just interested in jumping back to something that your guest John had brought up. I think something that he said was just incredibly telling. There's generally sort of this creep with legislation that we always get. I remember when I lived in Michigan years ago, the seatbelt law was passed because it was guaranteed that it would not be what's called a primary enforcement issue, which is that you couldn't be pulled over for not wearing your seatbelt. Within several years, of course, we had legislative creep, and it wound up becoming a primary enforcement issue. Then, you know, we're given all sorts of assurances of the ministerial exemptions, you know, for example, also the right of a duplex owner to choose his neighbors. And then we hear John say something like, well, we've got this now, and it's just a matter of time before we come back for the rest of it. And, you know, I think this is a legitimate fear. This is why so much of the public will frequently vote these things down.
And did you have a specific thing, Eric, that concerns you in this conversation? Is there something specific that you're worried about advancing?
Well, I think as far as what I'm afraid of being advanced, you know, I mean, we throw around the term phobia a lot. We attach it, we pathologize people with this, but that's not fair to everybody else. Am I a phobe because I'm interested in keeping rationality within the law? You know, we talked about folks who would be using the public restroom. Who's going to actually start policing that when I want to send my 8-year-old daughter into, say, the Fred Meyer restroom? Who's the burden on now to determine that that person is actually, say, living the lifestyle? Do I stop? Do I have to go get a manager to talk about this?
All right. Well, thank you, Eric, for your call and raising your concerns. I would say, before my guests answer here, I would say that when my children were young, they had to go in the bathroom with me. I have two sons and also stepsons. And until they got old enough to really protest that, they always had to go with me. And then I would make sure, when they started going into the men's room by themselves, I would make sure that no one else was in there, or I could put an eye on who was going in there, just because I wanted my kids to be safe all the time. And it was not an issue of who I was concerned about. I just had the general parental concern of making sure my children were safe. And it wasn't, you know, my concern wasn't aimed at anyone in particular. The Fred Meyer bathroom question.
Sure. I mean, I think at least respect to that question is the same person that currently, I mean, right now, before this law was passed, there's no one in any of these places are checking the bathroom to make sure who goes in and who doesn't go in. I do think, yeah, parents have to be concerned. They had to be concerned before to make sure that the bathrooms were safe, any place that their children were out of sight. I don't think that fundamentally changes by allowing transgender people to use the bathroom unless the premise is that transgender people are somehow predatory, which I don't think is the case. If anybody's in the bathroom that you're concerned about, I think talking to the manager would be also the way to go.
Absolutely.
I also just generally, and with respect to his question, coming from a conservative approach, even though people will claim that I don't deserve that title anymore, I have sympathy for that concern. The fact that these laws and our culture seems to be shifting in ways that are incremental, but going away from traditional values and things like that, I think it's a legitimate concern. I think the problem is we look at it the wrong way. Instead of looking at, like, when same-sex marriage was passed, instead of having a conversation about the value of marriage itself as a traditional thing, we decided to, throw out, marriage all of a sudden lost all its value to people because other people are now permitted into the institution. It was an opportunity, I think, for conservatives to have a much better conversation about why marriage is important. And the same is true with these issues. I think, to me, even though people criticize me on my own side of the aisle about putting this forward, I think it's a conservative issue. I think treating people based on what they bring to a job or what they bring to the marketplace and not on these extraneous considerations is a conservative virtue. So I think he's on to a good point, but I think the way we're looking at it is incorrect.
We are going to continue our conversation today about equality and AO96 as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Rural CAP commemorates 50 years of delivering early childhood education programs like Head Start and Parents as Teachers. Signature housing programs, including weatherization, self-help housing, and permanent affordable housing, make a difference in our communities. AmeriCorps members and elder mentors have positive impacts to education, health, and the environment. Learn more at ruralcap.com. This message is sponsored by the Rural Alaska Community Action Program.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about Anchorage Ordinance 96 and equal protections extended to people of different sexual orientations and gender identity. John, you wanted to weigh in on that last point quickly, and then we're going to go back to the phones.
Yeah, just about the last caller's thoughts about the creep, basically escalation of removing exemptions. I just want to point out that we need to be clear that the exemptions are exemptions where we allow people a right to discriminate against a group of people. I understand that in terms of a priest who does not share, others' doctrinal beliefs that LGBT folks are no different than anybody else. But when we're allowing them to discriminate against a gay math teacher, I don't understand what the math teacher's sexual orientation or gender identity has to do with teaching math.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones for just a moment. Morgan is in Kuskokwim. Hi, Morgan.
Yeah, good morning. My comment is, the people of Alaska, they voted against this gay marriage amendment, but the governor or our current administration, they went and they passed the law, because the Supreme Court, and now it's opening up all these can of worms, and it seemed like, they found a way to, like talk radio, it's no longer it's no longer a forum where people can really express their views. Like only one view is being expressed, like mind control. If you look back in history, when countries go immoral like this, in the Bible it says, they're playing with fire, and until the next election, people need to speak out. You're opening a whole can of worms here when you start doing this, and it's not fair to the majority. It's no longer a democracy.
Hmm. Well, that's an interesting thought, that it's no longer a democracy. I guess democracy in Morgan's idea is extended only to a certain part of the population?
I mean, we do have to be really careful in terms of civil rights have never been the product of the majority. You know, in a democracy and in a republic where the people maintain the power, we have to protect minorities that can't assert themselves as the majority. And just to be clear, the Walker administration actually fought the marriage equality case.
Yes.
His attorney general, Craig Richard, fought that, took that all the way. It was the Supreme Court that eventually sided with marriage equality.
I would just add, I think it's a hallmark of American politics that we have the Constitution, which is specifically designed to protect minority rights. One of the things that, people talk about the founders a lot, they were afraid of mob rule. I mean, they thought, because they were, in a sense, a minority among the population and were concerned about the tyranny of the majority. So we've always had protections built in for minorities. What we've done over time is simply recognize different attributes or different groups that were
sort of fine-tuning.
Exactly. It's an evolving process. It's not a new process, but protections for minorities has been there since the beginning.
We only have about a minute left. Here's a completely random question. We've got a couple people on the line that we're not going to get to, but both of them, it looks like they are. One says, happy with the ordinance, it's a non-issue. The other one says, isn't this a non-issue? What about a guy in Girdwood who bakes cakes? What can this person do or not do?
He can do, basically the question comes down to whether he can choose to provide his cakes and his services to a same-sex wedding. Currently under the law, he would be obligated to provide his services to a same-sex wedding in the same manner he provided it to a opposite-sex wedding. He has to treat all of his customers. Since he's open to the public, he cannot discriminate against any race, color, creed, or sexual orientation or gender identity.
All right. Well, we are out of time. Once again, I got to only a handful of my questions. Thank you to my guests, Bill Evans of the Anchorage Assembly and John Arono of Managing Editor, Founder of Alaska Commons. Thanks to my engineer, Dave Waldron, Josh Edge on the phones.
Possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2015 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
These days, being into STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, doesn't make a girl a geek, it makes the world a better place. If you like numbers, nature, computers, and figuring out how the world really works, go to beanengineeralaska.com. You just might like what you learn. And it's not just for girls. This message on Alaska Public Media brought to you by ExxonMobil in Alaska.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.